Okay, I think we can start. So my name is Xavier Wiekemans, and I'm a professor at the University of Lille. And it's my pleasure to introduce Thomas Lenormand from CNRS at Montpellier. Lately, he has been investigating. Different types of allelic conflicts in relation to gene expression. And in particular, he has applied those models to the evolution of sex chromosomes. And so his talk will be one of a few others in these two days, presenting or working on models for the evolution of elongation of sex chromosomes in the absence of sexual dimorphisms.
Thank you, Xavier. And thanks for organizing this nice meeting. Thanks, Paul, Tatiana, and Carlo. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's really my pleasure to be here. So what I'd like to do this morning is to talk about theories of sex chromosome evolution. So there are many theories, and to doing so, I will present some of my recent work on that topic. So first, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, and in particular, Denis Rose, who contributed a lot to all this work, and students, Suzy Talon, Frédéric Fion, and Ericsson, and some funding. So I will try to be very brief for that introduction, because you all know classical theories for the evolution of sex chromosomes. And they involved three major steps in the classical theory. So you got recombination arrest, degeneration, and then the evolution of dosage compensation, which requires evolution of regulators. And usually people think that it occurs in that order, and it has been investigated a lot, and you're probably very familiar with that. And today we'll discuss another way to look at the evolution of sex chromosome, where the causality and the chain of events is different from this classical theory. So, and it starts in these models, regulatory evolution is really the important first step. And then recombination, arrest, and degeneration follow. So if you want to build a model or a theory for sex chromosome, you need several ingredients that are really necessary to build such a theory. Because you want to explain those three features. So for recombination arrest, you have to introduce variation for recombination on the Y. And when I mean variation, I mean mutation either suppressing or restoring recombination, so that you will be able to investigate whether recombination arrest really occurs on the long term. Then for degeneration, you need to include the fact that you got deleterious mutations in genes in the coding sequence, because that's what we observe. And for regulatory evolution, what you need is to, of course, include the evolution of regulators in the model. And in fact, when you want to build a theory of sex chromosome, you need to put all those features together because they interact, as you'll see. And in many cases, well, many people have been investigating these different steps, but often in isolation, so each step after the other. And doing so, you know, is difficult to see how they interact. So we built models using these very basic features to see how it works and what it does. And so just I insist a little bit on how we model evolution of regulators, because that's really something which is less familiar maybe to people who are working on the evolution of sex chromosomes. So I insist on that. So in eukaryotes, regulation is organized because we've got cis regulators and trans regulators. Cis regulators in yellow here in front of genes are, let's say, a promoter sequence or an enhancer sequence, are sequences that interact with transcription factors. And when they change, when they mutate, only the expression of the gene which is on the same molecule of DNA will change. And in contrast, transacting factors, for instance, transcription factors, they can be expressed and from a different place in the genome, for instance, and they usually involve a diffusible molecule, for instance, a protein. And because this protein will diffuse, it will interact with both cis regulators, and so the mutation on transacting factors will influence overall expression levels, but it will not change the relative expression of the alleles at the diploid locus. In the model that we build, we have, so on the sex chromosome, we've got genes with their cis regulators, and elsewhere in the genome, we've got transacting factors that interact with those loci. And in the case of a sex chromosome, what we really want to do is to have the possibility that dosage compensation can evolve. And to do so, you really require that you have differentially expressed transcription factors in males and females. Otherwise, you can't really evolve dosage compensation. So to make the model completely symmetric, we use for each gene one transcription factor which is only expressed in female and one which is only expressed in male. So in those models, the only asymmetry that exists at the starting point is the fact that one sex is heterogametic at the sex determining locus. That's the only asymmetry between males and females. Then you consider a sex chromosome, which is, initially it's like an autosome where you've got many genes on a map with some recombination rate. And in blue, you've got this sex-determining locus where you have a dominant allele, let's say, determining a male, for instance. Briefly, I won't have time to detail all the building of the model for fitness, but I give you the key elements here. You've got to compute the fitness of each individual in that kind of model, and there are different components. The first component is that you got to have first you say that cis and trans regulators determine quantitative traits. That's the way we model regulators. And on the gene, you assume that you got deleterious mutation with some effect, which is variable in that case, drawn in a distribution, and that they can accumulate up to a point, let's say, and at that point, we call S max here, you say that the gene is a knockout, it's just not functional anymore. And those mutations, we assume that they are partially recessive, which is because mutations tend to be partially recessive, we know that from measurements, but it also and crucially depends on the relative strengths of these regulators in these models. So if an allele, a deleterious allele, is relatively more expressed, then the fitness effect will be a little stronger. Then if it's a little bit less expressed, it will be a little less deleterious. So it's as if dominance was slightly changed by the presence of cis regulators. And then finally, you assume that for each gene, there is a stabilizing selection on dosage, means that you want a given amount of protein for each gene, and that's under stabilizing selection. And so the coevolution of cis and trans regulators will ensure that you will stay around those optima. All right. Now, how do you handle the problem of recombination? So when you are looking for the evolution of sex chromosome, what really matters is when recombination stops in a region that includes the sex-determining locus, because otherwise it's just an inversion like on an autosome, and we don't care about this here. So here we have a situation. So initially the sex chromosome is fully recombining. So that's the top at the top. So you've got all those, you know, all the genes and the sex determining locus. And then when there is a recombination suppression event, a mutation, let's say you can think of about like it's an inversion, for instance, it suppresses recombination. So perhaps you don't see that very clearly because it's a bit too. So here in very light blue you have an inversion, so that captures this fragment of the chromosome. But here in this type of model, we consider is the fact that another inversion can add up, so that you can increase, you know, the the non-recombining region of the chromosome, but you allow also for reversion, so that there is a rate at which the last inversion can be reversed, so that you are not stuck, you know, always recombining. Of course, that's a parameter of the model. You can set it to zero or whatever, and you can study the effect of that. But it's not inevitable that recombination stops in this model, because it can go both ways, right? Because if there is only if you only assume that recombination can stop and you can never go back, then even in a neutral model, you know, sex chromosome will stop recombining, and there is nothing to really to explain, to be explained. And then we use a measure of what you get out as an output of that kind of model is a region of the chromosome that which is Z, which is a fraction non-recombining. All right. I will present some recent results where we include the fact that sometimes you can also have a sex antagonistic locus. You know, sex antagonistic locus has been the main theory to explain recombination arrest on sex chromosome. And so we consider a situation where you can add, among all those genes, you can have one locus which is sex antagonistic, meaning that you got two alleles, here is a red and green, and they have antagonistic fitness effect in males and females. And depending on, of course, the distance, there is a distance from the sex locus that determines the recombination rate, of course. So what's going on in those models? First, what's going on in absence of regulatory evolution? So you set all the mutation rate on the regulators to zero, and you don't consider any sex antagonistic locus. In that case, so what you see on that picture, so that's a generation in log scale. And here is the value of this Z bar, so it means the average fraction of the white, which is not recombining. And in fact, it does recombine. So you don't observe recombination arrest. You can see that there is some little variation, but there is no long-term arrest of recombination and no accumulation of deleterious mutation, no degeneration. But this dynamics, when you look a little bit closer to what's going on, in fact, there is a turnover of inversion that's going on. For instance, that's the distribution of the fitness at birth of inversion. And some inversion capture a fraction of the chromosome, which is perhaps less loaded in deleterious mutation, so which has a marginal fitness which is better than one, better than the average in the population. And just because of this fact, this inversion will tend to fix in the population. And because you are on a Y, if they fix, it will cause kind of a stratum, on the Y, because it will stop recombination. And so that's the different size classes of this inversion that you can, but it's the same phenomenon for all. But the problem for those inversions is that once they fix and recombination is stopped, they start accumulating deleterious mutation. And so that the rate of decay of those inversion, depending on their size, so the larger they are, the quicker they degenerate, because you've got more selective interference, more accumulation of deleterious mutation. So that, you know, the largest inversion here decay faster. And so very soon, in fact, this process of degeneration offset the initial benefit that this inversion had to begin with. And so and if you have a reversion at that point, then it will select those inversion out of the population. And you restore a new, fresh, and beautiful Y chromosome without any big load of deleterious mutation. And then the process repeats itself. That's indefinitely. And you got some lifespan. So that's a log life expectancy of those inversions. So most of them are very short-lived. But some, so that's in log. So in log 6 is 400 generations. So some of them last some hundreds of generations. But eventually, they are reversed and eliminated. And so this process alone does not lead to the evolution of sex chromosome. When you add a sex antagonistic locus to that kind of model, you got very similar dynamics. except so that's the same type of time, and the different colors refer to the position of the sex antagonistic locus, which is closer at the bottom or far away from the sex determining locus. And you can see that there is a lot of things going on, but it looks like as if recombination was stopped to some extent. And in fact, it's not the case. What you have here is, again, a phenomenon of turnover, where you, because of the presence of a sex antagonistic locus, you select very quickly for an inversion that captures that locus, but then it degenerates. And because it degenerates, eventually the accumulation of deleterious mutation will reach a point where the initial benefit of the sex antagonistic benefit of those haplotype are offset by the accumulation of deleterious mutation. And then you have a reversion that occurs, creating a But it's not long enough, you know, to really lead to a completely degenerated sex chromosome. So now if you remove sex antagonistic locus and you let the regulators evolve in that kind of model, which was the initial intention, what you actually observe is the fact that, contrary to the situation we saw, you got a steady accumulation of stratum where recombination stops, and this is stable on the long term. And so why is you got such a behavior when the regulator evolve? So here what you can see is that you got four stratum, so four recombination arrest, and in green the fraction of genes that are silent on the Y, and the fraction of genes that are knockout, corresponding to a full knockout of the gene. So you've got in green the fixation of stabilizing of inversions that were initially lucky at birth. So it's the same process of having a lucky inversion. That's really what starts the process. But once lucky inversions fix in the population, then the regulators start to evolve. And what you can see is that the dominance from the perspective of the allele on the Y drops. So it was initially set at 0.25, one quarter, it drops to zero for all the gene on each stratum. And so in fact, those parts of the Y chromosome become silent, and that's the reason they then accumulate a lot of deleterious mutation. And the accumulation of deleterious mutation, you can see here, so that the amount of effect of deleterious mutation accumulated on those strata up to 0.3, which is the Smax value I was mentioning. So those genes are completely knocked out. So what's going on here? You can look at what's the marginal. So that's the most difficult part to understand. So that's on this graph, you've got the marginal fitness of inversion that are successful, the ones that stay around on the long term. And when you look at their marginal fitness, what you observe is that, you know, they start slightly above the average. So it's computed. So it's very important to explain how this marginal fitness is computed. It's computed relative to the, imagine you've got the equivalent fraction of the X chromosome. Imagine you put that part of the X chromosome back on the Y, and you see whether your actual Y is better or worse than something that would be recombined from the X, if you follow me. And that's what is represented here. And so initially, you know, those inversions have a benefit because, you know, they were those lucky inversions I was mentioning. So they start with a benefit, then you got this decay. But, you know, this decay slows down, and for a successful one, then it goes up again. And that's because it goes up again, the reason the system becomes stable, because even if you have a reversion and a recombination, they are better. And the reason is the fact that, so here are the ones that fail, you know, and it just goes down. So here you got a situation where you've got an unstable equilibrium, which is asymmetric. So imagine you've got here one-to-one diploid expression, and if you go that direction, you got weaker X cis regulator, and you go in that direction, you got weaker Y cis regulator. But so that's an unstable, once you stop recombination, that's an unstable equilibrium. You could go either way. Except that, you know, the two are not identical, because if you go in the direction of Y silencing, then you can accumulate more and more deleterious mutation, and the more deleterious mutation you accumulate, and the more they become silent, and because the gene become silent, the more it accumulates deleterious mutation. And so it's a one-way street on that side. But on the other side, on the X, if the X become a little silent, maybe it will find out, eventually it will be homozygous in female, and then if it carries a deleterious mutation, they will become homozygous and it will be removed from the population. So you can't accumulate deleterious mutation on that side of this unstable equilibrium. That's the reason you got this feedback loop, and eventually, you know, you will fall the cliff here for all genes. And the fact that it stays there is it's because the evolution of the regulators create some sex antagonistic effects. So that's, I got just briefly to explain how dosage compensation works in a nutshell, very simple situation. For instance, imagine you are in a male where the cis regulator here on the Y is completely silent. Then you've got to have a stronger expression of transacting factors to have two protein expressed from the X, contrary to a female where the two X are functional and you have the transcription factors that are weaker, suggest you also have two protein expressed, assuming that the optimal dosage is two here, right? But when you want to recombine those chromosomes with those cis regulators, it creates sex antagonistic effect. For instance, imagine you are in a female and you have a X which is recombined from the Y. It will import, you know, cis regulator from the Y that are weaker compared to the transacting factor in female. And so you will have underexpression in female. And in male, if you import on the Y cis regulators that were on the X and were stronger, then you will end up with overexpression. And that's the reason, you know, for each gene in this regulatory model, sex, the emergence of dosage compensation creates sex antagonistic effect, and that's the cause of the stabilization of those inversion. So the key points, I'm done. Short-term recombination arrest can occur with lucky inversion, so it's not very difficult to obtain a short-term arrest in recombination with that. If you have a sex antagonistic locus, it helps, clearly, but it is not necessary. It's not a necessary feature. However, it's not sufficient to maintain long-term recombination arrest and degeneration. If recombination can be established, we can discuss that. And there is an instability of one-to-one diploid expression after recombination arrest, which leads to this asymmetric silencing. And this regulatory sex antagonistic effect prevent the reversion on the long term. And this leads to fast degeneration here. So overall, evolution of sex, so compared to what we knew, this kind of new model with regulators tell a different story. They say that maybe the evolution of sexual dimorphism and sex antagonistic looks, maybe they don't play such a role in the evolution of sex chromosome. I haven't discussed it a lot, but here in those models, selective interference play a completely different role and a much stronger role, much weaker role than in classical theory. And regulatory evolution is a key feature, and if you incorporate it from the beginning, then you got these different dynamics. Thanks for your attention.